Michael Smith, it's episode 43 of the Canes Cast, and you know what people are going to find out on this episode?
Oh, what's that?
How Han Solo got the Millennium Falcon.
Wow, I had no idea that's how he got it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We talked about it just then.
Right there. If you didn't hear it, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Or you can... Disney's going to start to owe us for talking about these movies the way we do.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got my tickets to see Solo, the Star Wars story.
I read a quick little report as we start off with a little bit of movie talk. No big whoop. They said this movie, they knew the opening line, the first thing you hear from Han Solo, is going to be the most important utterance maybe in movie history because of the character and the buildup. So they said they spent more time deciding on what the perfect first line should be.
That makes sense. Well, and it's the Kasdan... not brothers, I guess, what father and son who wrote it. And Lawrence Kasdan has obviously a storied history in writing for Star Wars movies. So I fully put my faith in the script and everything behind it. So I'm hoping for good things.
Yeah, and Harrison Ford signed off on it. He thought that Alden Ehrenreich did a great job playing young Han Solo. So,
and let's be honest, I mean, it's probably the first of a few films.
I would think so. By the way, he won the Millennium Falcon in a card game.
Oh, spoiler alert.
They've already said it if you've watched any of the movies.
Yeah.
So
spoiler alert for movies.
Yeah.
That have been out
like
for
35 years
a
old.
Long time.
Good Lord.
I think the statute of limitations is way past.
Yeah, way past. What did we decide? 30 days?
Yeah, a month.
Yeah, we said a month, so we're way past that. All right. Well, who knows? We might come back to this a little bit later on. Definitely next week after Michael Smith sees it. I would plan on seeing it as well. A few other things that are out there in the movie world that we'll get to. But more importantly, coming up on this episode, Don Waddell is going to join us. All right, Michael Smith, there is, believe it or not, a lot going on in the hockey world, such as the IIHF, that is the International Ice Hockey Federation World Championships. Well, I should say there was a lot going on over. Sweden beat Switzerland, as everybody had in the gold medal game.
In a shootout, too,
in
right?
overtime, yes, in a shootout. The Swiss played fantastic hockey. As a matter of fact, they knocked the Canadians out of the opportunity to play for a gold or silver medal. And then the United States knocked the Canadians out of the medal round completely by winning the bronze medal game, a 4-1 victory for Team USA. I thought the team that seemed to be destined to win this whole thing was the team that got knocked out by the Swiss, and that was Finland.
Yeah.
Finland was on fire. And notably because of two players, Sebastian Aho and Teuvo Teravainen of the Carolina Hurricanes. And I just think it's a great thing that those guys went out and had that kind of tournament internationally, because the World Championships, it's not a bunch of scrubs skating around. You got some of the best players in the world who are still taking part of this tournament. And those two players were talked about as much as anybody else who was playing over there.
Yeah, I mean, they, by all accounts, had dominant tournaments. It's just unfortunate that it came to an end as soon as it did, losing to a Swiss team that turns out was actually pretty good. I mean, as you mentioned, beating Canada and then taking the Swedes to overtime in a shootout in the gold medal game. So silver for Switzerland is, I think, an incredible accomplishment.
I think just a broader hockey topic, and I know this is the Canes Cast episode 43, Mike and Mike Explain It All. But, and also Don Waddell will be joining us again.
Yes.
If you haven't mentioned that, he will be explaining a lot more, team president and general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes. But I think this is a good thing that we saw Germany make it to the gold medal game in the Olympics, Switzerland, their first ever gold medal appearance in the World Championships, their first ever win where they could eliminate Canada in an elimination stage. And I just think that this is good for the world hockey stage, because you take a look at where players are coming from. Last year's number one overall pick, Nico Hischier, Swiss. You're starting to see a lot more players start to develop in a lot of these countries that, you know, we knew they would play in these tournaments, but they were just kind of the cannon fodder for the big four or five countries to roll through. Now they're starting to develop really good players, and I think that's only a good thing for the game. And then it translates to the players we're starting to see over here in the NHL.
Yeah, it is. And I think, by all accounts, you look at the Hurricanes who participated in the tournament, and though only two of them bring back medals, Derek Ryan and Scott Darling, You have, as you mentioned, Sebastian Aho, Teuvo Teravainen, extremely dominant performances in the tournament. Sebastian Aho being named the tournament's best forward and being named to the tournament's all-star team, too. And that's, you know, being named the tournament's best forward, that takes into account, too, Patrick Kane winning MVP and scoring title.
Yeah.
Teuvo Teravainen with 18 points in just, what, 8 games?
Yeah.
Which is a new record for
Finland.
Team Finland in the World Championships, which, you know, is just confirms sort of what everyone who watches the Hurricanes on a regular basis knows about Sebastian Aho. But now it's people around the world are starting to take note of, okay, this is some kind of talent. And then you look at the Czechs with Martin Necas, and they got eliminated by Team USA in the quarterfinals en route to Team USA's bronze medal. But Necas, he's only 19 years old.
Yep.
And he put up, I believe it was 4 points, 2 goals, 2 assists.
Had a huge goal for the Czechs to send, I think their game with, correct me if I'm wrong, was either Russia or the Finns to overtime.
Well, but
I remember it's a huge goal that sent the game to overtime.
Yeah, and his power play goal, he actually finished the tournament 5 points, 3 goals, 2 assists, because his power play goal in the quarterfinals actually tied the game at 2 on the power play.
Yeah, with the U.S. on the deflection.
Yeah. So for a 19-year-old to be able to go onto international ice and do that against other NHL players, some who are, I don't know if they're any twice his age, but some quite a bit older than he is, I think shows a lot about where he is in his development, and gives the Hurricanes reason to be optimistic about his ability to perhaps step into the NHL lineup.
I'm going to be very surprised if Martin Necas is not on the NHL roster.
Yeah.
Come October.
So really, just all across the board, a good representation for the Hurricanes in the World Championships.
Derek Ryan had a really good tournament, too, for Team USA.
Kind of under the radar, too, because he was a third, fourth-line player, center used on that team. But he scored a pair of power play goals. He scored a shorthanded goal, the team's only shorthanded goal of the tournament. Just a quietly kind of a solid tournament. And that's sort of important for him as he goes into the summer as an unrestricted free agent.
Yep.
So, you know, whether he catches, obviously the Hurricanes know what he's capable of. But for him personally, if he's trying to make a statement of, hey, I'm an NHL player, I think this performance in the tournament, I think, goes a long way to that.
Yeah, absolutely it does. And, again, that's a fun tournament to watch. Right up there with the NHL playoffs and the unbelievable story that's been going on out west and isn't going to end just yet, the Vegas Golden Knights, but more on that coming up. What we do want to get into is Michael and I had a chance to sit down with the team president and general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, and a lot of questions are out there, especially as the front office has been reshuffled a little bit, and as you get closer to the draft, how do you get these questions answered? Well, we asked Don Waddell himself.
Here he is now.
Don, first, thanks for joining Michael and I here. And, you know, it's funny how, you know, an hour or two can change the fate of a franchise. And I know a lot of people have been excited and talking about it, but you were there when that card flips over and you know that you're not drafting 11th, and then the next card flips over and you have the possibility of drafting first, but the Carolina Hurricanes draft second. Just, I mean, now that it's had time to sink in, how big is this, the fact that you guys hold the second overall pick for this organization right now?
Well, it's big, Mike. It's, you know, as you said, that night when you get passed on the first turnaround, you know you're going to be picking in the top three. And we all talk about the draft, and we know there's some top players at the end. Obviously, there's the defenseman that's probably going to go number one. And then when you got down to the final three and the first card was Montreal, you know you're sitting there saying, we're going to get a great player here. And so, you know, to me, when you go into the day looking to at the 11th pick in the first round and move up the second, you know, we didn't go to number one, but I really feel like we won the lottery big time.
What kind of impact can that have on a club that seems to be close to taking that next step?
Well, I think it gives you the opportunity with some of the young players that we already have in our team. Obviously, we've got some great veterans, but then you got like Martin Necas coming over here. Now you throw another player that you draft here right in your lineup, you know, Aho. You know, our best players are going to be our youngest players. You know, and again, nothing against the veterans. The veterans are here and do a great job for us. But it's something that, you know, you're going to be able – if you look at teams that have had long runs and success, you know, everybody talks about Pittsburgh. You know, you talk about, you know, Malkin and Crosby. You know, in a year or two, we might have three of those kind of guys between our draft pick, Ned Cash and Aho.
How excited were you to watch the World Championships and then see one of those young players was the guy everybody was talking about in Sebastian Aho, and then kind of – quietly behind him, Teuvo Teravainen had a great tournament, and you run down the list. A lot of Carolina Hurricanes and Marty Nature stepped up and had good tournaments. I mean, that's got to make the general manager and team president happy to watch the tournament that way.
Yeah, no, I watched every game I could here in my office, and we've got everything on video, anything we want to go back for. But, you know, you're always hoping for your players to shine because it makes your organization look good. And certainly we had that at the World Championships, and yeah, I believe it's something that we all can look forward to here in Raleigh.
I know that we're here to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, but throughout your career, you've been heavily involved in USA Hockey. What does it say that USA Hockey gets a medal and puts in the tournament that they put in, where some people weren't so sure where the United States were going to be, and here they are getting a medal and beating Canada doing so, beating Canada twice to do so?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Beating Canada for that bronze medal was huge for them, for us as a country, USA Hockey. You know, I think going into the tournament, if you'd have talked to everybody, I think everybody picked U.S. to finish fifth or sixth in the tournament. And, you know, they had a great tournament. And, you know, I thought the team was well assembled. They got timely goals from the right players. Having a guy like Patrick Kane play for the team was a great addition. So, no, very proud for USA Hockey and very happy to at least come home from a medal. It's a tournament that the U.S. doesn't come home with very many medals, so that's a big step for them.
We're just about almost exactly a month away from the 2018 NHL draft, which will take place in Dallas. What is the process like leading up to that draft? Where is the front office at this point in time, and where do you go in the next 3 to 4 weeks?
Yeah, good question. We just finished our amateur meetings a week ago. We had all our scouts in here, and so preparing for the draft. We left here with what we think is a good list, but now it's time to sharpen our pencils on that list. And, you know, between now and the next month, lots of video will be watched. We have the combines coming up next week in Buffalo, where you get to interview the players that you choose to interview. And then they have testing where we'll send Bill Bernstein and our trainer, strength and conditioning coach, and Doug Bennett, our trainer, up there and actually get eyeball put – you know, get the eyeball test of how these players look, how they train. It's always good, these interviews are short, 15, 20-minute interviews with each player, but you can get a pretty good sense of feeling about the player.
It's funny how the process, I think, has changed over the years and how much access now, I guess, you get to players and what you did. How much can a combine in an interview maybe change an organization's image or thought of what we thought this player was or where he fit with us?
Yeah, you know, one interview is not going to change how you're rating a player, but what you find out is what I've always said is, you know, you'll bring in a player from the Western Hockey League and you'll ask him some questions, and you might ask him, you know, who's the toughest guy to play against. And one way or another, you're going to get him to answer a question about one of the guys on your list, you know, if he's hard to play against or if he's on his team. You know, we always say, you know, give us who's your best teammates. So you try to find out information not only about that player, but other players that we're considering to draft. So I think it's a very valuable tool to have. You know, again, it's not going to change and make a major decision whether you're going to draft a player or not. I actually interviewed a player back when I was GM in Atlanta that I said, do you ever watch hockey games at night when you're not playing? He said, no, I don't really like hockey. So that kind of statement probably goes in your notebook a little harder than some of the interviews.
This team has been busy kind of retooling the front office over the last few months. Two new additions, Paul Kropelka and Rick Dudley. What can you tell us about the two of them and how they're going to help this front office sort of come together?
Sure. Paul comes from the dark side as a former agent. I negotiated some contracts, not a lot of contracts, but some contracts with them. Very well respected in the industry. When we were talking about bringing in a person of this caliber, I talked to not only a lot of people that he worked with, but a lot of GMs around the league in their dealings with him. And everybody had very positive things, very professional, you know, handled every situation. Usually, you know, there's always, when you're negotiating contracts, there's always going to be some that communication, but disagreement about the value of a player, and it's how you handle it. And everybody's thought Paul is very professional about it. Rick Dudley, Rick and I go back multiple years. My first player coach job working was for Rick Dudley, and he was the coach and GM and left after 1 year, and that's how I got the job as coach and GM. So Rick and I have worked together several times. You talk to people in the hockey business and in industry, he might be known as one of the best hockey scouts out there. He lives in his car, he drives 100,000 miles a year, and he just goes watch players. And I've talked to him every day the last 5 or 6 days. Every time I have a thought about a player, I'll call him, and he's been doing the same back to me.
Is there a job that Rick Dudley hasn't held in hockey? Because, I mean, you look at the resume. He's done everything. And how much of a wealth is that when a guy like that, when the opening came to be, where you knew you could call on him and you have that resource for the organization now?
Well, we all get, comfortable with certain people in the business. Let's face it. I say you can't hire friends in this business because the end result's not going to be good. But you can hire friends that are very capable of doing their job. And that's how I look at Rick. Rick's had his track record is unbelievable. When we were talking to him, he had multiple, I can tell you, teams that were trying to recruit him there. The relationship him and I have is very strong, and I think he wanted to be a part of this year, and we're just very lucky to have him here.
You've been involved with the business side of this franchise for the past few years. How exciting was it for you personally to get the opportunity to get back to working on the hockey side?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's a nice challenge. I did it for a lot of years. Really enjoyed this last 3 or 4 years on the business side, and we'll continue to enjoy that. But, when you get an opportunity to kind of put your stamp on a team, when you're making trades and drafting players, that's what it's about. You like to assemble not only a good group of players, but also a winning atmosphere. Obviously, getting Rod Brindamore to coach the team, I think, is a huge step for this franchise. New ownership this past January and Tom Dundon. So I think all of the stars are aligning here, and that's exciting. And, again, winning the lottery to get the second pick doesn't hurt either.
Carolina Hurricanes team president and general manager Don Waddell joining us here on Canescast. You mentioned Rod Brindamore. We know his credentials can pretty much paper the Hall of Fame. As far as what he brings as a coach, what do you like from how you watched him operate in your one role to – he's ready for this job and this challenge to get this team where it needs to go.
Yeah, it's interesting because I got to watch him from a little bit of not involved on a daily basis. I would see Rod pretty much every morning because my workout wasn't quite like his workout, but we always crossed in the gym and just talked hockey. And I like talking hockey with him because he was very he's not a fence sitter. We got a lot of people in our business that sit on a fence. He knows what he wants, and he knows the kind of players he like. We've spent a lot of time since the season ended when I took over that, about how we're going to build this team, how we want to, coach the team as far as, what his ideas are of the type of players he wants. He's just an all-around impressive hockey guy, but more importantly, he's even a better person. And I think when you surround yourself with these kind of people, as we said before, I think it's going to you're going to have tough times in this business. Every day there's going to be some tough times. But if you surround yourself and have good people working on it, you're going to find a solution.
How much of an asset is it for you moving into the GM role, knowing that he knows that locker room and the dynamic? So questions you might have on players that are already here, he already has answers for you instead of bringing in maybe somebody cold who you're not sure what their take's going to be on these players.
No, I think that's a strong point as far as Rod being connected here with the hockey club. I think if Rod had been someplace else and we're interviewing, he wouldn't have had the leg up on some of the people on the outside that we did interview. But he does have a good pulse of the locker room. He, as an assistant coach, I think you learn the locker room even sometimes better than the head coach because you have a lot more communication with the players. You're kind of the go-to guy to help out situations. So, when we've talked about it, we've gone through the roster few hundred times. He's got a great feel for each player and the players that he knows he can get more out of and who he can rely on from a leadership group.
It's been a busy offseason, I think, so far for the Hurricanes, who obviously didn't make it to the Stanley Cup playoffs, but still plenty of moves to be made on the ice and off the ice. Do you expect that the offseason will continue to be busy for yourself and for the front office here?
I truly believe we will be. It's interesting because things are starting to really heat up on a lot of fronts right now. In the last 24 hours, I've probably had 12, 13 calls from other general managers. You know, the World Championships are coming to the end. A lot of guys had gone over there. So, you know, everybody's looking. You know, we've made it clear that, you know, we can't be satisfied with what we have. We have to change the mix up some. I've been very vocal about that. You know, it's not that we have bad players, but we have players that maybe it's time for a new change of scenery. And when you do that, maybe it'll present another player coming in here that can do a good job for us. So I think we have to be willing to look at everything. Doesn't mean we're going to give anything away. We're not going to make any bad trades. We're not looking just to move players off the team. We got to make decisions which we think is going to make us better going forward.
At the press conference where Tom Dundon introduced Rod and you and your new roles, he kind of said that you're the owner whisperer, I guess is the better way to put it, that you can slow him down when he needs to go fast. How important is it? And just for a lot of people out there who bring up Atlanta, you had 9 different owners who were in the same spot. How different of a role is this for you, where there is just one voice that you have to report to instead of 9, and, you know when to say pump the brakes or, hey, this is a good idea, let's go with that?
Yeah, when Tom was buying the team, I tell a story that I didn't know how I was going to have time to eat because at that point, everything had to go through me before he bought the team. And we were spending hours and hours on the phone. And then when he took over, you know, we've been able to build a relationship where I think he trusts my judgment, and, you know, his patience is probably not the best word to describe Tom. You know, he wants to get things done and get them done correctly, but he wants to get them done as soon as we can. I think it's a good thing for us right now. I think but, you know, we've had these conversations about this is why we can't force a trade if not a trade to be made there. You know, everything we're doing, you got to make sure you think about it and think about what the results are, both on the positive and negative side. So I think Tom is right on track here. I've never seen somebody learn players as quickly as he has. He knows more about players, not only on our team and other organizations. I'm just amazed by every day when he calls me and he gives me new ideas. He gives me a lot of ideas about, you know, different organizations, and it's great to have.
And I think everybody is excited for what's coming up. As mentioned, the best talent on this team is the young talent. I don't think that's offensive to anybody here. I know you've got to be excited for the draft. So does the draft now for you, does this take forever? Is this going to feel like a year with all the phone calls you have to take and that has to happen, or is this going to go by in 5 minutes for you? You've been here before.
Yeah, it's going to go by. You know, right now there's not enough hours in the day to get everything we want to get done. But the draft's going to come up real quick. It's a month away. You know, like I said, we got combines next week, and then, you know, before you know it, you know, we'll be sitting in Dallas, be in Vegas before for the awards and Board of Governor meetings, and so we got some busy times. But it's going to come quickly. But the good thing is our guys have done a great job all year. This is what they do, and they're prepared. You know, it's not like we can run around right now and see players. Pretty much everybody's done. We will watch some more video on some of the players, but the staff has done a good job, and they'll be ready for the draft. And come June 22nd, we'll sit up there on the stage, hopefully, and make the right decision.
Don, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Mike and Mike, always a pleasure to be with you.
He's got some good stories.
He does.
That's one thing. When you talk to a guy who's been around the game for as long as he has, the stories are endless, really.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things we can build off of, too, and one we do want to thank, we already thanked him, but want to thank Don Waddell again for taking the time to join us here on Canes Cast. But you know, the stories he has, we might need to go revisit it and just do a let's have a good story with yeah. Don Waddell. Remember that time? And we'll go from here. We can also do the same thing with Rod Brind'Amour. And I'm going to go back to, you know, we might be touching on topics we've already hit. And one of them for me with Rod Brind'Amour is the fact the way that this front office is being restructured and what's going to happen, that Rod Brind'Amour steps in and knows the players he wants, what he likes, and knows exactly what needs to be fixed on this team. And he's going to be the man behind the bench to do that. Again, Don Waddell said it. as an assistant coach, you 90% of the time have a better feeling of the pulse of the team than the head coach, just because the assistants actually do more communicating with the team.
Yeah,
I think Rod's going to be an over-communicator, though, in a really good way with this team.
Yeah, the assistant coaches are the ones really doing the hands-on kind of video coaching and, you know, in the drills at the end of practice or morning skate, working one-on-one with some of the guys on certain things, whether it's face-offs with Rod Brindamore or Steve Smith running through his defensive drills that he does. They are the ones that I think more often get to connect one-on-one with the players. And now Rod gets to take what he learned as an assistant coach and take that into the head coaching position. And I think, you know, as you said, if he over-communicates, it's going to be a great thing. Because I think he's one, and we touched on this last week, who is going to be able to relate to the players, who's going to be able to make that connection and get the guys to buy into what their roles are. And that's when you have team success, is when every person in the locker room is given a role,
yep,
and then buys into that role. That's when you find success.
Yeah, and that's the charge with the Hurricanes now in the rebuild. Now, a few other things that we look at as we get closer and closer to the end of the hockey season, when the Stanley Cup gets awarded, that means we already start, and a lot of teams have already started gearing up looking towards next season as well. Do you think, and this is where we're going to start it right here,
if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
The Carolina Hurricanes are going to have the busiest offseason they've ever had transaction-wise, meaning signing people, trading players, and, of course, what happens via the draft.
I'll take it. I mean, I don't know how you quantify something like that.
Oh, I think when I say quantify it, when we add it up at the end of whatever, we'll say July 4th, even though you're still going to sign free agents and those windows are open.
Yeah.
But if you include trades, free agency, re-signing players, not signing players, this is going to be, if we tally it up, it'll be the busiest offseason this team has had.
I can see that happening. I mean, even too, just including everything that's happened with the coaching staff and the front office in the last few months, if you want to factor that in, I think it's been an incredibly busy time of year, especially considering you look at the news cycles and the team has worked its way into a lot of the national hockey news cycles, even though they haven't been in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yep.
I mean, it's been with coaching, with the new GM, retooled front office. So it's already been an incredibly active summer. And I think Don Waddell touched on it a little bit, and I think it's only going to get busier for this team. So yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, this is where I generally ask, do you have one?
Okay.
You say no.
Yeah.
We haven't crowdsourced anything.
No, we haven't. So I'm really up the creek on this one.
All right. Well,
I can think quickly though.
Well, no, I got one for you.
Okay.
It goes back. I said we'd circle back to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Ooh.
And here we go. The Golden Knights winning the Stanley Cup would be the best storyline for the NHL this year.
I'm going to take it. It's arguably one of the best storylines in sports.
I would agree.
And I don't know how you look at it any other way.
Oh, I know how.
I mean, I get it, but like at the same time, I think it's a great story.
I think that this, for people who were paying attention to it, how this team was built, what they did, it was incredible. And no one can take this away, because for me, it goes into the big things, Mike, when you and I watch a lot of hockey. Michael Smith and I watch a lot of hockey. And, you know, we can do we know a good team when we see it. They kind of took the model of what it means to be a good team, and they put it on its side. And look, Pittsburgh's still a great team that's built around Crosby and Malkin. There's no doubt about that. The Nashville Predators are a great team that is built around goaltending and a great defense. The Winnipeg Jets, I thought they were going to win the Stanley Cup. They were my pick. The Winnipeg Jets, a great team built through the draft, good young forwards who are fast and physical. That's what they built. And a couple of superstars there that you can say. I mean, they lucked out getting Patrick Laine, the second overall pick. And a few of their, you take a look, a few of their players are high draft picks, like top five, top 10 players. You took Vegas. Coaching matters. Gerard Gallant is a great coach. He wins Coach of the Year in a walk, period. A lot of guys did good jobs this year. I thought Jared Bednar in Colorado did a great job. But Gerard Gallant
Paul Maurice, too.
Oh, again, a team that people thought was crazy for extending Paul Maurice and Kevin Cheveldayoff, the general manager's contracts, and they make it to the Western Conference Finals. But you watch how that team plays for Gerard Gallant. And for me, I kept trying to see, there's a flaw. There's something. There's something that you can attack them. Now, they're not the greatest offensive team in the world, but they've got enough to where if you make a mistake, they just jam the puck right into your end, right into the net. And that's what they do. They're fun to watch. They play the same game every night, and it's just been a great story. But the how I can see it, one, the old man who yells at Sky, this is not good for the tradition.
I am old.
They should have earned it. The Maple Leafs haven't earned it. Talking to you, Canadian media, but not all of you. And it is funny that some guys have, like, gone out of their way to, I don't know if you how much you pay attention to it, I never said this was a bad story for the NHL. You don't have to back up your claims if you never said it. You know, if people want to lump you in with the people who have, you don't need to defend yourself. You know what you've said and what you haven't said. The hockey kingdom is pretty smart. People know what you're saying, what you're all about. And, you know, if they want to single you out, they're going to single you out anyway. So who cares? You just move on. But I think this story is awesome because the NHL needed a story that grabs the front page of everywhere. Not Canada, and I hate to say this, Nashville was a great story, but it was really a great story last year for Nashville. You know, some people said, hey, look what's going on in Nashville. This Vegas story, it's good everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's Sports Illustrated cover worthy.
Yeah.
And that's it's something special about the group is they've come together as they call themselves the Golden Misfits.
Yep.
They're not I don't know if anyone really predicted this type of success. I don't know if anyone could have predicted this type of success, but I think there's something special about the group that they just bonded together. They fought against the odds all season long, and now they're four wins away from winning the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
And I think they probably win it now. Like I don't see how they slow down or somehow stumble. Like any time where you thought, okay, this might be the end or this might be the end, even through the regular season, like I think we all were looking for a point where the wheels were going to come off.
Like I said, you were looking for that flaw. Somebody's going to figure it out.
But nothing ever came. Nothing ever came about. And if it did, it didn't last for longer than a few games. And so, like, even through losing Marc-Andre Fleury for a period of time, the thought was that, oh, well, they haven't been battle-tested in the playoffs. They'll probably crumble and lose to LA in the first round. And that didn't happen at all. So it's what a great story it's been for the NHL, for sports in general. And now the pressure will be on Seattle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Although, you know what this does? Totally throws off the timing of that Vegas franchise, as Bill Foley, the guy who put up the money to put him there, said, 3 years, we got some young guys.
Yeah,
maybe year 4 or 5, we'll compete for a playoff spot, and then who knows? Now this is going to be.
Now they're just going to win the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder if that just changes any of their plans of the guys who they were going to think of, okay, we're going to sell off. I think it already did.
Well, and to think about a year ago, I think it was, I guess, that the picks were submitted. Their expansion draft picks were submitted. And you just look at the roster, and nobody thought that it was going to play out the way it did.
Well, there were a few names. Like you'd see James Neal, and you're like, well, this guy scores 30 everywhere he goes. And Jonathan Marchessault came off of a 30-goal campaign with Florida. So you're sitting there, and you're thinking, okay, there's some offense there.
And Marc-Andre Fleury, a goaltender.
They got a good goalie
who'll
keep them in games. Good young defense. I mean, it just seemed like everybody they were taking was a defenseman at one point in that draft. So much so, by the way, NHL, if you're listening, don't ever play How You Like Me Now Again by The Heavy. Please just stop at the award ceremony. Every pick they kept playing.
I can hear it now.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
We won't sing it or play it, though, because then we'll get sued and copyrighted.
Well,
and stuff.
We can't play the full song.
They're big fans.
Yeah, well, they are. And who isn't of Kane's cast, especially now that we're here at episode 43. But I think it's a great thing. I really do.
I think it's a fantastic thing. And here's something. Here's my, if you like it, take it. So looking at the success Vegas has had this year and all the wheeling and dealing under the table shenanigans that happened leading up to that expansion draft.
What do you know was going on under the table?
Does it change what happens if and when Seattle comes into the league?
No, I don't think so. I think that the league has to give Seattle
the exact same
opportunity to build a team.
But then do the other GMs learn from their time through it last year and say, okay, you know what? If I'm putting player X available, then just take player X. We're not going to give you second round picks and third round picks, because now Vegas is loaded.
Oh, they're set up for years to come to be a dynasty.
Right, and all because...
That's the scary thing.
Because teams were protecting other assets and saying, here, take these assets, and it turns out these assets that they basically paid Vegas to take from them are not too bad. Does it change that strategy?
Yeah, I think it will.
Yeah.
I think it will.
I think it has to a little bit.
Yeah. It's... You'll still see a few teams do it based on salary cap and, you know, how you're going to be able to and who you're going to be able to protect.
Right.
A few teams are still going to do it, but I don't think you're going to see it to the level that Vegas and George McPhee were afforded. But you'll see it. It'll be there. There'll be a lot of, why'd they take this guy if this guy is available? Oh, because they traded him a second-round pick.
Yeah.
So,
no, interesting times ahead for the league and for what looks to be – The 32nd franchise.
But I like it, and to tie it back to the Canes, you said it, there's some power when you can get a group of players to believe in the same goal. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're all about. And if you can get everybody to buy in and pull the rope in the same direction, you know, you can say earn it, whatever it is you want to say, there's something that's really, really important. Not everybody in the locker room has to like each other. I think that's one of the biggest fallacies in sports, because it's hard. I mean, you're talking, depending on the team and the sport, well, you know, upwards of 20 people to try to get along.
And it's family in any sense of the word, because you're spending so much time with them. There's inevitably going to be conflict in some situation.
But it's what you can get them all to do is buy into the goal.
And that's exactly what happened in 06.
Yeah. And it happened in 09 when Paul Maurice took over, and I think that's exactly what happened in Vegas.
Both all of those teams, I don't know if anyone would argue they were the best. Like, if you looked at them at the start of the year and say, this is the best team in the National Hockey League, I don't think anyone looked at any of those teams and said that. But they had a great group of guys who came together and were talented enough to basically prove everybody wrong.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you can be great on paper, as Nashville and Winnipeg were, but there's something about a group that just comes together and succeeds. And that's exactly what Vegas is doing.
And it's funny, after the lockout of, you know, 05 and then the 05-06 season, where there's a banner hanging here at PNC Arena, I was in Vegas, and I don't know why I will always remember this, but my wife and I were there, and she's a big hockey fan, and we were looking up at the boards for the NHL future odds. It's the summertime. And she looks up, and the two teams with the longest odds to win the Stanley Cup when we were in Las Vegas that year, and tying it all back to Vegas again, the Buffalo Sabres were 75-1, and the Carolina Hurricanes were 85-1 on the board that we were looking at. And those were the last two. And my wife goes, you know, I should put $10 on each of those teams just because. And I said, well, you could have. She did not.
Oh.
But, I mean, those
are. There was going to be a lot of money at the
end of this story. Would have been a much happier story. But, I mean, it just goes to show you what you can get when you get a group believing in
even
the right
Vegas,
thing.
Well, they were what? They were super. I don't know the exact odds, but
I didn't check.
Unbelievable long shot.
Give me a second because I can find out.
We're going to kill some time.
I know the place. No, I know the places where to go with this. But if you look right now. Let's play this game. Do you see any similarities between what we know the Carolina Hurricanes have versus the Vegas Golden Knights, who are going to the Stanley Cup Finals? The one place where Vegas has it over the Hurricanes is in net with Marc-Andre Fleury. We understand that. But are there any other similarities you see?
I mean, I think Vegas plays a fast game, and we saw that when the Hurricanes played in Vegas, just how quick and competitive that game was. I think Vegas has some good young talent, just like the Hurricanes. You found the
answer. I found the answer. At one point, the Vegas Golden Knights were 500-1 odds to win the Stanley Cup. That's probably when they opened it up.
There have to be some people that put some money on the Vegas Golden Knights.
They do not have let's put it this way. According USA Today has done the research on this. Mm-hmm. As you know, this is how our podcast goes. Mm-hmm. USA Today's talked to Westgate Superbook spokesman Jay Cornegy. 13 bets were made when the Golden Knights were at 500-1, but they were what Cornegy would refer to as grocery money. Like, not necessarily enough to make a dent in,
right,
you know, huge money.
Just, hey, we're going to plunk some change down and see what happens.
However, you know, enough people start buying, they'll move the odds down. Or as the season goes on and they get off to that hot start,
right,
they'll move the odds down. A couple of people have gotten in when the Knights were at 300-1 to That's... win the Stanley Cup. The biggest single payout is going to be a $400 bet that was made that will pay $120,000. If they win the Stanley Cup,
I'd take that. That's a good chunk of change.
I would
right
take.
There.
I would take $1 yeah. at 500-1, or exactly. $1 at 300-1. I'm good with that. So, however, the Golden Knights stand to hand the sports book the biggest loss in history.
a Vegas team of all.
I know, and you know what? Everybody was worried right. about Vegas being a team that would throw off the books because they would throw games. Okay.
Well, yeah.
There you go.
Now they've thrown off the books for the exact opposite reason.
Exactly. I love it. Love all of it. It's been a great story.
I don't know what to expect from them next year. I think that's – we're totally getting ahead of ourselves here. They haven't even – this season hasn't even wrapped up yet. But, I mean, they obviously have a pretty strong core. So I don't know.
I just take a look at the forwards, how young and hungry the forwards are. And I take
that
a look.
Sounds kind of familiar.
And I take a look at the Canes' defense that I think is going to rebound. I think a lot of people put a lot of high expectations on the Hurricanes' defense coming into last year, and deservedly so.
Right.
And I don't think they lived up to it. I think to a man, they will tell you they all could have been better.
Yeah.
There was. It doesn't mean there were bad seasons, but they could have been better than what they were. So there's some talent back there.
Yeah.
And we'll see it have to get better. But I just think this is going to be a really interesting offseason, and Can't wait to see actual pieces starting to fall into place for the Hurricanes.
Yeah. We've had some of those, at least off the ice, in terms of filling out the front office, mm-hmm. filling out the vacancy behind the bench. But now, as we get farther into the offseason, the draft, free agency, you'll start to see those on-ice pieces fall into place. And then it'll all come together when training camp opens in September.
Yep. Can't wait.
It seems like...
I can't wait for the end of June when you get to see... The draft picks come in, and you have that rookie camp, the Summerfest, take place for the it is Summerfest, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for the Carolina Hurricanes, and you go from there.
It'll be, we're a month away from it.
Exactly.
Essentially, that's crazy.
All right, I think we've covered everything.
I think we have. We will come to you next week on Tuesday.
Yes.
Memorial Day weekend. We'll be out of the office, obviously, on Memorial Day. So whatever you choose to do over Memorial Day weekend, choose wisely. Have fun. See some friends. See some family.
Yeah, I mean,
whatever.
If you want to hang out on Memorial Day, I'll be coming back from Nashville.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Pretty excited about it.
Maybe we can talk about that on the next podcast.
No. Odds are I'm going to.
We'll save that for another time.
Odds are, although a podcast guest. The OG, wow. Kyle Hanlon, will
the
be
OP.
Joining me. The OP, the original podcaster, will be joining me in Nashville.
Very good. And maybe we'll have another guest on next week. Don Waddell was a very kind and gracious guest, and he gave some good stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have another guest on next week.
Maybe it'll be Chuck Caton.
Wow.
Crowd noise only.
Cut that one in there.
Under the buzzer, my friend. Just making sure. So
make sure you subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. Rate us, review us on iTunes, 5 stars preferably.
Always. That means we're great friends and you're a good person and you have a lot of good taste.
The other end of the spectrum, we don't talk anymore.
No. You're just being rude if you're doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if it's a one, then just never listen to us again.
I mean, maybe we're that bad.
There are times where I feel that I'm not pulling my end of the
but if
the
it's
rope
a
here.
One you can like tell us why, expound upon it.
I hate your faces. It's a podcast.
Yeah,
you don't
see
our face.
See us. Well, unless it's the video portion.
Yeah, well,
which
we're still efforting.
Yes.
All right, well, yeah, you're not gonna get me to go into anything. I know some people might rate us a one now. I don't know
We've only had one, I think, so far.
One.
1-1. We don't know who it is, but we'll find you.
It's quite
Liam
all right.
Liam Neeson's coming for you. I don't know who you are, but I will find you.
Michael Smith has a particular set of skills. When he finds you, he's going to type you to death.
And then post you on the internet.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm in.
Yeah.
All right, so next week, I'm going to go see Deadpool 2 at some point in time this week.
And I will be seeing Solo on Saturday.
I will not see it on Saturday. I will probably see it after we podcast.
Perfect. And then we'll talk about it. We'll give it a few weeks.
Yeah. Let people marinate on it.
Yep. We'll probably touch on it briefly.
It's funny, for the grief I've given you for not going to see Star Wars with us and podcast future guest to always be bumped, Mike Sundheim. I don't like to go to movies when they're first opening because I don't want to deal with the huge crowds and the talking.
Mm-hmm.
As most people know, I like my isolation.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good,
mm-hmm.
Especially at the movies. So I'll wait. I'll give Solo a couple of days, and I'll probably go check out later.
See, like a really late night. Or,
yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
It's sometimes
I want to watch the movie. I don't want to deal with, you know, somebody spilled their Coke, and then everybody was crying, and then there was anger. Usually me on the anger side of things.
Right. Anger at the person spilling their
Coke. You know, then I have to tell them, go knit. Why are you here? Knitting is my go-to if I want people to, be calm or not be near me.
Knit or crochet.
Or
cross-stitch.
Ooh, I couldn't do that.
No, I couldn't either.
Really
hard.
It's a valuable skill, but I'm just saying, people say it calms them down, so go ahead.
Yeah. I don't know what, I guess I just watch television to calm me down.
I'm not ashamed to say I still play video games at my age.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's it. Calms me down. Great. One of the best phone calls I ever got from my dad was an apology about video games once.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because he kept going, why do you play video games? I'm like, well, I'm getting too old to play real sports now. Because he would come over to my apartment when I moved out of the house. And he's like, why are you playing video games? I'm like, well, I'm too old to play. I go, I can't play football anymore. I go, baseball, can't do that, you know, the way I want to. I don't play softball because I can't deal with softball guy. I just can't deal with it. I can't. We're playing softball.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
We're playing softball, you know, and you see me when we played the media floor hockey game here.
Yep.
I mean, I'm breaking sticks. Not mine, but I'm breaking sticks.
Yep. Sure are.
Don't get near the crease, especially when I face 75 shots in the first period.
Yeah, defense is a bit
loose.
Bit loose.
I finally have gotten over that. A lot of work.
Until this year.
Oh, no. I am not letting the general managers be the general managers again this year. But, no, I got a phone call because my dad got a computer, and he goes, I just want to apologize. I'm like, why? He goes, I've played a video game for 6 hours. I get it. I went, all right.
Yep.
You're welcome.
And it's more fun to play, sports games because the players are, totally better than – you would be in real life, so it's fun to act like you're them in the game versus.
I don't know. There's nothing better than
to be them.
We shot hoops at United Center.
Oh,
where Jordan and the Bulls once roamed.
Yeah,
we knocked down a couple.
A couple,
not many, but a couple.
A couple. There were. You know, I hope. Hopefully, no cameras were rolling.
No
there,
cameras
there
were
few,
rolling. Yeah. But they were just ours.
Nothing beats that. That's
all right.
Pretty cool.
All right, I think this is how this podcast is going to end.
We've gone completely off the rails.
Yeah, you know, if you made it this far, you're the 5 stars, and we love you.
Yeah, we love you regardless.
Thank you. And you can let us know that you made us this far and let us know the place where you might have snuck into and actually maybe shot a hockey puck or a basketball or take a swing with a bat, that is.
Yeah, nothing else.
Yeah.
Don't be violent.
No. Let me.
Yeah.
And my anger management problems.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.